All right, so a lot to say about these issues. We made some progress yesterday and laid down some important principles. And there's a lot more, many more principles. So just, first of all, Ha'ara, it's interesting to think about. We opened this whole conversation with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It is interesting to think about the implications of that Mishnah. And that itself, one could spend a lot of time on. I'll just kind of point you in the right direction or in a direction. And maybe also this is something to add to the list for tomorrow. But the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that we started with in Perek Hey, Mishnah Yud, which says, Arba Midos Yesh Ba'adam. So first of all, Bechlal, if you read the commentaries there, you read the Tosfos Yontif and the Bar Tanura, you see some fascinating things about what these midos actually involve. Are we talking about actions, or are we talking about mindset? Is the Mishnah really focusing on just ways of thinking and what emerges from those ways of thinking? There's one particularly fascinating comment in the Bar Tanura, which could have political implications as far as assessing certain candidates. I'm not going to make any political comments. We don't want to forfeit our tax-exempt status, but you can look on your own in the Bar Tanura on that Mishnah and other parts of the Mishnah and tell me if you find any interesting haris as far as assessing different political attitudes. It's quite a loaded Mishnah. But just one point for us in terms of our efforts to try to figure out whether the sugya here and the sugya in Bava Basra are really connected fully, connected partially. What exactly is the relationship between them? So it's interesting to think that we put Sdom at the top of the bottom, so to speak, the worst of the worst. You know, Sdom really certainly seems to deserve such a title. They are highlighted in the Torah as being terrible people and then actually destroyed because of it. So it would be reasonable to think that Sdom really represents the worst attributes out there. But it is interesting just to think about the Mishnah. So we already noted that phrase, Shali, Shali, V'Shalcha, Shalcha, so the Mishnah itself has a machlokus about whether that is a Midah Beinonis or a Midah Sdom. That's itself interesting to think what that machlokus is about. But also, how does it relate to Shali, Shali, V'Shalcha, Shali? And if somebody says, what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine, so presumably that's worse any way you look at it. And it certainly seems like that from the Mishnah, that's the last thing in the Mishnah, and that's what's called a Rasha. So you would think that all the different things in the Mishnah, so Chassid, Namaretz, Midabainis, Rasha is probably the worst thing to be. So how does that relate to the Midah Sdom? Is Midah Sdom potentially less bad than a Rasha, so there are worse people out there than Sdomites? Or is it that somehow Sdom is potentially worse, and Rasha is a lower level of badness than Sdom? But you would also think objectively, and it's kind of mathematically, presumably it's worse to say Shali Shali V'Shalcha Shali than it is to say Shali Shali V'Shalcha Shalcha. So is Sdom not the worst you can get? So how do you relate to that? So it was just thinking about, you know, potentially there might be some room to say that Sdom is worse, and that a Russia is a Russia, but a Sdom is a super Russia, because in light of our discussion of the contrast between the sugyas in Bava Kam and Bava Basra, that in Bava Basra, so we had portrayed it as worse because you Sdom don't want the other guy to benefit. And that we have been working off the assumption that our sugya in Bava Kama is better, is still wrong, but is better, because a desire for money, for profit, That's a normal human desire. It's not necessarily justified, but it's a normal human desire, so that's not the worst you can get. So maybe indeed that's what's going on in the Mishnah, that a guy who says everything is mine. So shali shali v'shalcha shali. So he's a Rasha because he's taking stuff that he's not entitled to, or he wants to take stuff that he's not entitled to. But at least he's an understandable Rasha. He's a Rasha who's motivated by profit. That's a normal human desire. He's just not acting legitimately or even thinking legitimately, if you assume that the Mishnah is about mindsets rather than actions. So he's not thinking legitimately as far as how to go about that. But maybe Taka's dome is worse. That the idea that I don't want you to have, not because I want it to be mine, but stam, I don't want you to have from my stuff, even if there's no actual chisaron. So maybe that's worse than somebody who wants to take your stuff. So that's an interesting point to ponder. And is there a difference between the midah in terms of the mindset and actually acting on it? Like, would you say that when it comes to a goslin, so somebody who's actually taking other people's stuff, so he's worse practically than somebody who's simply not allowing others to benefit from his own things? But as far as the mindset, if we're talking about the midah rather than the action, then the mindset of somebody who would want to steal other people's stuff, okay, that's bad, but at least that's understandable. While somebody who doesn't want others to benefit from his stuff, it's not even relatable. So I think that's interesting to ponder. What exactly is the relationship between these different Midos in the Mishnah? And if you spend a few minutes looking at the commentaries of the Mishnah, I think you'll find other interesting things too. So I would recommend to add that to the list for tomorrow. Look certainly at the Bart Nura and the Tosfos Yontif on this Mishnah and the different interpretations, the different phrase. There's a lot to think about. So today, to go a little further, there's some key points here that we still have yet to explore. So what about the question of why is it that seems like the bottom line in our sugya is that Zedne Nevezet Lo Chaser is Pater? What's the Pater based on? And there's a real fundamental question here to figure out. Because if you consider, there's an important Pnei Yoshua over here. Has a discussion about the Tosfos, second to last Tosfos and the Chaf and Aleph here. What would the status be of ze lo nene v'ze chaser? Right, Tosfos says we pater, right? Question about that? So, why is he pater? Right, because of grama. That even if I cause you to lose out because of my benefiting from something, because I'm trying to help myself, and my help means that it's going to somehow cause you a loss. Here, what Tosfos describes is Afal Pishagaram Hefsa the Chaveru, the Fila Girshu Chaveru mi Besu v'Nodelus b'Fanav, means the Lagram of Alma. That we know that even if somebody prevents someone from accessing his house, so the damage there is considered to be a grama. So to go back to the beginning of the Tosa, filu b'chatz is a kaimel agra. Let's say this actually is a commodity for the owner. The gavra, the love of the megar, right? So there, what do you have? So this is a gavra, love of the megar. So he's eno nana, and the other guy is chaser. So zeh lo nana v'zeh chaser. So havi matz le meva the pater. So that person you should say is pater. Kevushlo nana afal pishagarim hefsel chaver. So since he's not nana, so his pater, even though he caused a hefsed to this guy. So what emerges from Tosfos, and it's not so surprising in light of the Gemara, is that the chaser part is not necessarily a basis for a chiv. So based on that, couldn't you ask, well, then, why don't we say also that Zen Nene v'Zeh Chaser is also not a basis for a chiyuv. If the chaser doesn't make the cut, so then apparently the hanal part shouldn't change anything.
Can you repeat that?
If we're going to say that zeh lo nene, v'zeh chaser, is pater, because it's just a grama. And what's important to understand also is that in these examples in the Gemara, so in this particular Amud here, these examples, the facts are all basically the same in terms of what's happening. The question is the background. Right, so Reuven is living in Shlomo's property. So there's three different ways to have the background for that. Either that Reuven needs a place to live, so he's Nene, and Shimon normally rents it out, so he's Chaser if he doesn't get paid. That's Zenene v'zeh Chaser. Or Reuven doesn't really need a place to live, and Shimon normally rents it out. That's Zelonene v'zeh Chaser. Or the case we decide we're talking about, that Shimon doesn't rent it out, but Reuven does need a place to live, so it's Zenene v'zeh lo Chaser. So in other words, the situation is always the same, it's just the question of the background that affects things. So if it's a situation of Zelon and Avzeh Chaser, Reuven doesn't really need the place, so there's no measurable hana for him. But Shimon does rent it out, so he is Chaser. So Tosus just said he's Pater there, because it's an indirect damage to the Chisaron. So if you're going to be Pater for that, so then why should it be if he's Nene, it changes? If all we do is tweak the part of Reuven that he gets Hana, but the damage to Shimon is the same, so why should the din change? Isn't the damage the issue? It's still a grub. You hear the question? So this is an issue that's worth considering. And the Pnei Yehoshua, in discussing this, the Pnei Yehoshua considers that we have to look at what is the reason why it is that Zenen of Zelo Chaser is Pater. Yes, sir?
Wouldn't that say that the Chisaron is not Mechayev? Doesn't that mean that the Hana?
Yeah, but then what kind of a Mechayev is that?
Similar to
we saw that. And the problem is, again, if you say the Hana is the Mechayev, so then how come Zenen of Zelo Chaser is Pater? Mathematically, it seems that nothing's going
to
add up.
Wait, to say the Lonen of Chaser is Pater, then we just said the Lonen of Chaser is Pater?
Right, Zeh, say it again, that which one?
Lonen of Chaser.
Right, Zeh Lonen of Chaser, according to Tosus, is Pater.
So then
right, so the Chisaron is not the
Mechayev. The Mechayev and the Chaser isn't.
Right, but his problem is it's not true because Zenen of Zelo Chaser is also Pater. Basically, 2 times 0 is 0. Right, so if Zenen.
Combination, though.
So, but how does that combination work?
That, I don't know, you need Chaser to be have like a Shem Chiyuv and then. Hana is how you evaluate the
chiyuv.
So
okay, so then let's figure out what that means. How does that work? Why is that true? So if chaser is the nature of the chiyuv, so then why shouldn't we evaluate things based on the chisaron? Right? How we get into this whole sugya from the Mishnah here is that these are cases where we're not evaluating based on damage. Right? It's not like a normal nezikin case. So if we're not evaluating based on damage, so then why are we evaluating based on hana if hana is not the mechayev?
We see that Hana is the Mechayev, or at least placed part in the Mechayev by the first case, in the case in the mission earlier, we're comparing to when an animal eats from Rishos, we say Mishayim Mashanim.
Right, and because there is a Chisar in there. But then the question is, so how do those two parts come together? How does the math work? If Zenene Vizelo Chaser is Pater, right? So apparently Hana doesn't do it. But according to Tosfos, Zelonene v'zeh chaser is also pater, so the chisaron doesn't do it either.
But
so which one does it?
But
If you say it's the Hana that does it, to mechayev someone when they get Hana, and Zenon of the Lachasar is like, we're telling him that he has to pay because damage to the person. So it's
so where's the Midas Tome you're identifying?
In Zenon of the Lachasar.
Right.
Basically go up to the guy and say, you got Hana, and this guy didn't lose out, so we're going to force you to pay. It's like based on being like Stoma.
Okay, so expand on that. So
the mechayev is hana, and you have to pay for the hana you get. We're only gonna make you pay if you cause somebody else a loss in the process, because then you're kind of stepping on someone else's foot. If you're not stepping on anyone else's foot, even though you should theoretically pay for the hana. It would be a nice thing is to pay for the hana. We're not gonna force you to do that, because then that would be like basically being like.
Okay, so let's build on that. That's essentially along the lines of what the Pnei Yeshua says. And many later Sfarim point out that seems to be the view of Rishonim too, that you could point to a number of Rishonim that sound like they're pointing in that direction also. So that's one possible mahalach. And just to explain what we mean by that, is that really, no, Hana is the Mechayev. And again, it's especially indicated that way because at the end of the day, if there's a bill, the bill is going to be calibrated by the Hana, not by the Chisaron. And that's going to be a glaring question, because why should we charge you for the Hana rather than the Chisaron? We're learning Bava Kama. Bava Kama, you pay somebody for the damage that you do. So why here is the Hana calibrating the bill? The bill should be based on the Chisaron. So the fact that you're charging for the Hana, it sounds like the Hana is the Mechayev. So if Hana is the Mechayev, so how come you don't always have to pay for Hana? Why do we say that if it's Lo Chaser, you're Pater? So it could be, maybe this is what Deo's getting at, and this is what the Pnei Yeshua sounds like, that really, no, you are Chayiv for Hana. But if it mamish doesn't come off the other guy's back at all, so then we should say, come on, be a nice guy. And maybe that's what the Midas Tome is. And the Jewish Midah that's the descendant of Avraham Avinu, opposite of stone attitude, is that, yeah, you're right, you could charge for this, I'll be din. But because we don't want to have that mindset that you're interfering with people benefiting in a way that mamash has no impact on you, so we say don't charge for that. And there's an interesting question to explore, which you can also see if you look at the Mefarshim on this Mishnah that I mentioned before. You know, is it that this itself is bad, or is it that it could create a mindset that is bad in other cases? Like, maybe it's not so terrible to want to charge here, but once we start charging for things that don't cost you anything, who knows where that's going to stop in terms of your hostility to other people benefiting. Hi.
Meaning, in Zenon or Zelochasr, in a case like that, if then the guy who provided the Hana, the owner of the field, was to then go and be toe-face rent or something like that from the guy who got Hana, someone then get involved and take it back? Or does it say no?
Because Meikar Den the Zachiv.
Meikar Den the Zachiv.
But it sounds like they kind of
force it, but if the guy's toe-face it, so then
sounds like they would. And it's an interesting question. You know, it's a very interesting afkamina, because what you're basically saying is, you know, what do we mean by the Ikar HaDin, and what do we mean by the practice? So normally, a situation where Tfisa comes up is what Ikar HaDin, there really is a Chiyuv, but for whatever reason we're not imposing it. I wonder if that's actually the model here, even though the words certainly sound like they fit. Or are we saying that even on the Ikar level, so there's something to pay for, but you don't get it coming to you because you didn't actually earn it. And to want it, we'll say it's not right. If there's nothing off your back, then, and especially once we have the language of kofin al midas tom, so it sounds like we'll be kofir you not to, you know, so it sounds like we will take it back just because the language here. But it's an interesting question to explore. Hi.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like, isn't this sort of saying, like, you know, ikar hadin is lifni mishur hadin here?
Well, the question is that lifni mishur hadin? You know, that how do we know that the language of lifni mishur hadin fits? Now, I don't think you're wrong in thinking there might be a relationship between the concepts, and I think that's also something that we should explore. But, and maybe we'll find time for that. But we don't know that this is Lefnim Ashur Sadin. What does Lefnim Ashur Sadin mean? That's itself a question that's important to, but we don't have yet an indication from the texts that that's what we're talking about. Now, maybe in Bava Basra, it may come up a little bit more, and I think we spoke about this a little bit, that the din of Bar Mitzvah is one of the models for Lifnim Mishur Sadin, the idea that when you're selling land, Bechlal, to prioritize the buyer who has a adjacent land. So it sounds like the sugya in Bava Basra seems to itself evoke sugyas of Lifnim Mishur Sadin a little more than the sugya here. But even there, so the Svarim Machalik, I think we mentioned that a little bit, that in the case of Bava Basra, it's less of a Lifnim Mishur Sadin there because the inheriting brother already has some claim to what it is that he's asking for. But we'll maybe explore that a little bit more. Hi.
This is going back a while. I don't know. I'm wondering, does this connect to an idea that we saw maybe like a few years ago, maybe 2 years ago or something, about, I think they came up in the context of Schiras Polim, where we talked about that there's just this inherent obligation that when you are benefiting someone else, so there's an automatic obligation. Maybe it had to do with something about not being like slaves to...
Yeah, that's an interesting... I think it's interesting to... explore. It seems like you're saying that's for a different, what you might be referring to, I don't remember in which context we spoke about this. It's like Rav Schechter has Yisod in his Sefer that Schiras Polim in general is a different kind of Machayev. It's not like a normal case of two people negotiating a deal and a price, but the idea that there's some obligation to somebody who's working on your behalf is like an inherent value in and of itself. And what we have suggested in that context, building on that, is that maybe because the Torah does say "Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim v'la'avadim la'avadim," that we're not allowed to be slaves to human beings, and we have all kinds of dinim that surround that idea, that maybe that's why also the notion of somebody not being compensated on some level for their labor is problematic to us. But that's something to ponder in of itself. I think that's a different point, though. So, in any event, so this Pnei Yeshua is interesting, and it has implications. There is another Mahalach in the Achronim, there are other Mahalachim in general, there are a few other Mahalachim in the Achronim, but there's another Mahalach which is different, but maybe overlaps. And that is that it can't be called Nene from you if you don't have any personal cost at all, as opposed to being nene min hefker, being nene from the world. And so if I am enjoying something and you feel you have some kind of claim, as opposed to my just existing and enjoying stuff that's there in the world, so what gives you a connection to this hana?
Is that to say that
there can't be a hana without a loss somewhere?
No, it's to say that this is a hana, but it's not your hana. Like, people walk around in the street, and they like looking at the world, they like looking at the buildings, and they like looking at people walking around, and they admire their clothing, and they admire their cars. So that's a normal life. Even though everybody could say, all right, so you have to pay. I drove past and you looked at my car and you looked at my suit, so I'm charging this much for the suit and this much for the car, and you're going to get a bill from everybody who drove past today. It doesn't work that way. You know, that's a part of just benefiting from the world. So if there's no loss to the person who wants to make a claim, it could be he doesn't have standing, to use the modern legal terminology. You know, that not everybody can come and sue anyone else. In American law, if you want to sue somebody else because you're interested in seeing something happen, so you have to establish why it affects you. You have to have standing. So here too, if I want to, and it's a kind of a rough comparison, but I say I want to charge you for looking at my car. So if I can't explain how that affects me in any way, so then that's not called hana from me. That's called normal hana from the world. Hi.
There's a question on Totos.
Mm-hmm.
That we're saying Zenen of Zechasar is chayav, but it should be patur according to this logic, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we're saying it is chayav, are we saying in that case then there's a chasar, would the guy be paying for the chisar or for the hana in that case?
So he presumably is paying for the he's paying for the hana. That's
for
the hana. Right. That's what provokes the question, or part of what provokes the question, because that itself is an indication that the hana is the mechayev. So if the hana is the mechayev, so then why do we say that? Tosus doesn't ask this question like that at all. But you put together Tosus's point together with this, and it presents.
Does everyone assume you're paying for the hana?
Yeah, that's the, so. This whole sugya is about paying for the hana. So the question is, why is it if you're paying for the hana, it sounds like the hana is the mechayev. So why should it be pater if the other guy is not the chas or anything? And especially put it together with the Tosfos that even with the chisarin there's not chayev. So the hana is the element here. So why is then of zel chas or pater? So we've basically just seen two ways to look at it. One way is the Pnei Yoshua, which I'll give you some of the Rishonim to look at, but many later Sfarim point out that the Pnei Yoshua's thinking seems to be reflected in a lot of earlier Rishonim, who were by definition earlier. And this, the different Mahalach, that it's not called Hana from you if there's no Chisar. Chad, you wanted to ask something?
No, we're good.
Okay, so I want to suggest something more out there a little bit to explain the hana as the mechayev. But in order to keep the maximal cliffhanger interest, I think I will delay that part to tomorrow. But just to talk more about where the Pnei Yoshua is kind of thinking. So that explains a couple of things. You know, explains why the hana, we calibrate based on the hana. And it explains also why it should be that if there's any chisaron at all, so it becomes that we charge you for everything. So if you had a chance, did you get through the Nod of Yehuda? So maybe also tomorrow then, this should be a priority to read the Nod of Yehuda inside. Nod of Yehuda is one of the major sources on this topic. So it should definitely, it's not super long. It's only a few paragraphs long, but it's one of the major, this, a lot more we can say about these things, and hopefully we will, but the Nod of Yehuda definitely is something you should not leave out. So he talks about the question that we started to explain yesterday at the end, the question of this typesetter who was hired by a Mechaber. A Mechaber wrote a commentary on two Sdarim of Shas, and he hired a typesetter to make a plate and to do all the work. I mean, the Nod of Yehuda goes through details about how exactly this was contracted out and how much that makes a difference. And this printer decided, okay, now I have these plates lying around. Normally, they destroy the plates afterwards. And this is also something the Nod of Yehuda explains. This is very different from our contemporary printing now that we have computers that make things much easier and much more efficient. But once upon a time, they had to use their limited resources to create plates with the words that would then be imprinted onto the page. And you had to use up what you have in order to do that and then to destroy it afterwards because you need to reuse those same tools in order to make the next book you're working on. So the normal process would be that they wouldn't keep them around. But this printer, he had a lot of capital or he had a lot of resources to work with, so he didn't have a need to right away destroy these plates. So he wanted to use what he had done on behalf of the author. He wanted to use his labor for his own advantage and to make another version of these mesechtas without this guy's commentary and sell this on his own. So the question came up, so can the author claim that he deserves payment for this, or can he stop him from doing it? So the Nod of Yehuda goes through this issue, and ultimately what he concludes is that there is a ability on behalf of the Mechaber to stop this from happening, or certainly to charge for it, because it's not lo chaser. This hurts him. Why does it hurt him? it hurts him in a remote way, but that remote way is significant enough to make the Zenen of a Zechasim. And how is that? Because it's competing against him. And the Rebbe describes this in detail. He says that once this guy had paid for this kind of formatting, so even people who weren't necessarily interested in his parish, maybe they wanted to learn those masechtas, they would have bought his nice version of these masechtas. But now, because the printer is coming out with his own version, so it's not going to be as much interest in buying this mechaber's sefer. So the mechaber is losing out by what this guy is doing. So that chisaron makes it zenen nevezechaser. So here it's an interesting question, and this maybe we'll talk about it a little more tomorrow. This is very relevant to issues of competition, but I think what's important to understand is that there's two components here, and that's part of what we're seeing. That if I compete against you, so sometimes I'm allowed to, sometimes I'm not allowed to, that's a whole question in of itself. But that issue is, if I cause you to lose profit because I'm doing something indirect, whether it's competing against you or giving you bad reviews or whatever it is, so that's not necessarily as if I am illegitimately taking something from you. You have to look at what the circumstances are. But here, the key component is it's not just that I'm competing with you. I'm competing with you against you with your work. I'm taking what you did and using that to compete against you. So I owe you for that hana. That's the point. That the chisaron, it's not clear I would have been liable for such a chisaron. If it didn't have the aspect that I was using your work in order to be machatz with you, then it's not clear there would be a chiyuv. But to be machatz with you and to do so through your work, so now you can't say that zenden of zelo chaser. That's chaser. And therefore that should be a liability.
Kind of like invention patent stuff like that.
It's relevant, yeah. So it's very much.
If those didn't exist legally, then they could still be this halachic concept.
Absolutely. So this, you know, if anyone's taken the ethical and legal class, we speak about this in more detail. But this sugi is hugely relevant to intellectual property issues, which are very complicated in halacha because some of the premises which intellectual property depend on are not necessarily so explicit in halacha, so understanding exactly what the issues are important and separating out some of the considerations. So we'll say a little bit more about this tomorrow, especially if I want to add my more out there theory. So that'll be our cliffhanger. I'll give you one hint. It's semi-based on something that we mentioned at the very beginning of the year. So if you want to take tomorrow to chazer everything we've done since day one and see if you can turn it out, then you'll definitely have a productive Seder. But okay, so to be continued, a lot more to say about this, and everyone should have a wonderful day.
Thank you.